Begin the current daven, so the super daf ayin tes. We begin on the bottom of daf ayin ches mem beis, three lines up from the bottom of the yamid, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf and from the previous Mishnah, where the Mishnah opened up the parak by saying that a woman that has an inheritance of nichsi melug, which are properties that the care and the principal remains hers, however the peiros, the produce, is the rights of the husband, he gets to eat it and to consume it. So the Mishnah had many different opinions about what is it that the wife is allowed to do with these items, because she can't necessarily just sell it, because the husband has rights to it, which are specifically the utility and the payers. So the last opinion mentioned in the Mishnah was that of Rib Shimon. And that's what where we ended the previous stuff, discussing Rib Shimon's opinion, that he differentiated between what type of nechasim of milug is the woman, the wife, allowed to sell, and which one she's not allowed to. And he said those which the husband knew about going into the marriage, so then that was part of his intention, he relied on that. Therefore, those properties she's not allowed to sell because of his rights to the payers. That which he did not know, that's something which, as the Gemara explained, different opinions defining what is that that's considered that he didn't know, but be that as it may, whether it's karka or that it was a Medina Siyam, that he didn't rely on, and therefore those nechsi milug she's allowed to sell, even though now he's not going to be getting the payers. Now we continue with the current daf with the following incident, which will culminate on the next by the end of the discussion regarding this opinion of Ribishim. So the Gemara brings, Hahi Itza. There was a woman that was a widow, and she was coming to get married to another man. Now Debaya Ditavrchinu Lenichse Megavrit. She wanted to avoid her new husband meriting in her property. She didn't want him to get it, because if she gets married, she comes into the marriage with it. So these are nechasim that are nechsi melug, and then he gets to use it, and he gets to, it loses some of its items because he gets to eat it up. So she wanted to avoid this whole situation. So what she did was, kasvesinu librata. She went and she wrote these properties, gave it away, wrote it off to her daughter. Now, one thing is Rashi says that she notified the witnesses that this is not really a gift. It's only called a mavrachas, which literally means to chase away. And that is, she didn't want her daughter really to get all her properties. She wanted that if, let's say, she gets widowed or divorced from this new husband, that she'll get it back. She just wanted that her new husband shouldn't get it because she's coming into the marriage with it, which will be nichsi milug. So Intsava v'garsha, she got married and she got divorced. So we continue on top of Ayin Tesa Medaleth. So she came in front of Rav Nachman to summon her daughter to give her back her properties. Now, the thing is that the daughter came and showed, I have a document showing that my mom gifted me this thing. So it's mine, not my mother's. So Rav Nachman tore up the document, thus indicating that the daughter has no rights to it, even though she had the document, and it goes back to the mother. So also Rav Anan lekamei de Marukva. So Rav Anan went in front of Marukva, complaining. Amalei said to Marukva, Chazi Mar, the master sees Nachman chaklaka. Nachman literally like the villager, meaning he's not proficient in how to adjudicate law cases, and he was complaining this to Marukva because Marukva was the avbez and he was the head of the courts. And he says, Heichim mekarei shtar d'inchi. Look, he's just tearing up people's documents. What's he doing? Going ahead and tearing up her document and giving it back to the mother. So Malaysa Marukva said to him, Emily Easy, tell me exactly, what was the story here that you're telling me, complaining about what he had done? So Malaysa told him the story, which was this woman who was getting married to another man, didn't want the new man to get all the rights, so she gifted it to her daughter with this intent of getting it back. So Malaysa Marukva said to him, Shtar Mavrachas, comrade, you tell me a story of what's called a Shtar Mavrachas, which is a document of gifting it to someone just to avoid somebody else? Hachi Amr B'chanayloi Bar'idi Amr Shmuel. This was what was quoted in the name of Shmuel. That Shmuel said, Meiru Haruani, I am someone that decides halacha cases, meaning to say that I took permission from the Resh Galusa, who, as the Gemara says in the first paragraph of the Sanhedrin, that you need permission from the Resh Galusa. And the reason being is because the Resh Galusa, the head of the people in the exile, only gives permission to someone that's proficient, he's a baki in halacha. So therefore, if you have permission, that means to say that you really know how to pass in halacha. So Shmuel gave that preface to say, and although I'm a Mehra, im yavei shtar mavrachas liyadi, if someone would come with a document of the shtar mavrachas, in other words, if the one who received the gift came to say, I want to keep these properties, I don't want to give it back to the one who gave it to me. Look, I have this document. He says, Akra'en, or Shmuel says that I would tear it up And therefore, he was telling, Maruk was answering to him, says, Rav Nachman did well. Because you see, Shmuel said the same thing, that you tear it up. Now, later the Gemara is going to ask, if you're saying it's not really a document, that's why the recipient cannot hold on to it, has to give it back, so how does it help to be mavriach? How does it help to avoid the husband if essentially the document was not a document, and it was a sham, the whole thing? So why shouldn't the husband then be able to go ahead and eat the peiris and maintain it? But be that as it may, Marukva said Rav Nachman did well. So Amalei Rav Rav Nachman. So Rav said to Rav Nachman, he said, when you tore up this daughter's document, so what were you relying on? As Marukva just answered for you, you're relying on Shmuel, and that's why you tore it. But time am I, what's the reason why Shmuel said in this halacha that I would tear up Ashtar Mavrachas from the Makabel who wants to hold on to this gift? Is because it's because a person does not forsake himself or herself and give away their stuff to other people. And therefore what Shmuel was saying is that of course the giver did not intend to totally gift it to that other person. It's just of course at the time when they were worried about someone else that was coming to take away their stuff, that they shouldn't be able to grab it away. So they said, you take it, put it in your name so that they can't take it away from me. But what Rav was asking to Rav Nachman, Shmuel's halacha was only when that person gives it to someone else that they have no relationship whatsoever. So you could say that, of course, the person's intention wasn't really to gift it to the person. They just needed someone else's name to be under, that it shouldn't be taken away from them. But Shmuel would agree that to one's daughter, one totally gifts it. So how can you go ahead and compare Shmuel's halacha to your case over here with a daughter? That Rav Nachman responded, no, afalachi, even so. But Makam Brata, even though it's in relationship to the daughter, nafshadifala, herself is better. She cares more about herself than her daughter, and therefore it is the same halacha. It's a shtar mavrachas, because even though she's gifting it to her daughter, it's only in the meantime that her new husband shouldn't get it. But when she gets divorced or widowed, she definitely is going to get it back. Now, the Gemara asks Meisvei, the Gemara asks on this halacha of Shmuel, which was the basis for this halacha of Rav Nachman, from the following braisa. The braisa says, if a woman, which is the case that this story was taking place with, if a woman wants to avoid her properties going to her husband, so what should she do? Because she has all these properties coming to a new marriage, and the husband's going to be able to eat up all the peiros milug. So what she does is she writes a shtar pasim, which in this context, shtar pasim doesn't mean like it usually means, which is more of a sham. Here it means from the word of, as Rashi translates, of pius, which is that she just appeases somebody, please take this gift, I want to give you my stuff, not because I want to give it to you, and essentially it's a reference to shtar mavrachas, it's just because I'm going to get married, so I don't want my husband to take all my stuff, so therefore, do me a favor, please take the stuff, so that I can reclaim it after, if I get divorced or I get widowed. That's the Reb Shimon Gamliel. The Chachamai Mecham say that Ratza, if the recipient wants to, Mitzachikba, they could laugh at her and they could hold on to it forever. Because since ultimately she's gifting it to them, so then they could keep it. Unless if she writes for them in this document a specific type of a nusach, then they won't be able to hold on to it. Which is, she writes to them, Mehayoim, from today, it's given to you, only if ukalisha erza, that if I will it to be that way. In other words, as Rashi explains, this will help be that it should be a mavrachas to avoid her husband, which is that if the husband comes to merit in her nechasim, so she'll say then, oh, you know, I understand you, I know you think these are my properties, but I want it. That's at that point when the husband comes, let's say he finds out about a year later, oh, I realized you have all these properties. She goes, no, I want it to be a gift. So it comes at the retroactively, it was gifted from when she says, I want it to be a gift. Now, however, if the recipient of the document comes to say, okay, so it's my gift, she says, no, I don't want it to be. So therefore, if she writes in the document that from today, when I want it to be, then it'll be a gift to you, if my husband comes and claims it, but if he doesn't and you come to claim it, then I'm going to say that I don't want it to be a gift. That's the way that they won't be able to hold on to it. Now, that the Gemara asks, time of the chasuv aleihach, it sounds like from the Chacham, only because she writes this type of this terminology in the document, then they won't be able to hold on to it. But if she doesn't write like this, then keninu lekeach, then it sounds like, as the Chacham seem to be saying, that the purchaser, the one that's getting the gift, gets to hold on to it. Now that refutes Shmuel. Shmuel says, Shtam Avrachas, I would tear it up, has no value whatsoever. But here we see something from the Chacham, that's not true. Only if she writes a certain terminology, but if not, they can hold on to it. It is a real matana. So therefore, like in the case of Nachman, the daughter should be able to hold on to this stuff. Amar Bzer, Bzer says, Loi Kasha. No, it's not a contradiction from this Braisa on the opinion of Shmuel and Rav Nachman. Because Hull, when did Shmuel say that the recipient, and Rav Nachman took it a step further, even the daughter is not going to be Kaina, that's Bekula. That's when she writes all her stuff, everything she owns, she's writing off to somebody else. Now, since she didn't leave over anything for herself, if she's going to get divorced. So that's what's called, we assume, that definitely she was not writing it to really gift it to the person. And therefore, it was just mavrachas, it was just avoiding somebody else. So when she gets divorced, she gets widowed, she gets her stuff back. Ha, this is in the Braisa that the Chacham said that if the recipients want to, they could laugh at her and they could hold on to it. That's been Mitzasa. When she wrote some of the stuff, she wrote some of the stuff. So then it's a gift. It's only if you write them, then it won't be. But if it's, since it's only some of the things, then even Shmuel would agree, like the Chacham, that it would be a real gift. Now, the Gemara continues asking on Shmuel, as we alluded to this before, that if according to Shmuel, as he's explained the cases, that when she writes all of her stuff to somebody, then we said that the recipient is not really being kainet. So, v'iloi kaneni loy keyach. So then if you tell me that the recipient is not really acquiring it, so then the question is, how does that work as a havracha, as an avoidance of the person, like in the case of Rav Nachman, of avoidance of the new husband, nikni nu baal, then the husband should acquire it, and he should eat the peiris, and he should inherit it if she dies before him. Why do we say that that avoids him if we're saying it's not really a shtar? Because if we're saying that the recipient doesn't get to hold on to it, obviously it was never gifted to them. If it's not gifted to them, it's really still hers. If it's hers, the husband should be able to inherit it. So Abaya says, and this is why we introduced this whole continuum, which is related to the Gemara's discussion in the previous daf. He says, Asoim kinachasim she'en yiduin labal, that we consider this the equivalent of a properties that is owned by the wife, but it's not known to the husband. And the reason being is because when he married her, he didn't marry her with the intention of these properties because he thought it was a complete gift. And valibad Rebbe Shimon. And we're going like Rebbe Shimon, who we explained in the previous daf, that he is quoted in the Mishnah by saying that nechasim that he doesn't know about, the wife is allowed to sell, and he doesn't get the rights of the peiris. And therefore, as we see, that's essentially the same case over here because he doesn't know. Although he knows of it, but he thought it was gifted to the other person. And though it's not really a gift, it's only shtar mavrachas, and essentially it really is still her stuff, but it's enough considered not hers in the sense of the husband not getting the payers. And that's why we said that will be enough to avoid the husband, but essentially it's still going to be hers, and therefore when she gets divorced, she gets it back. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on the thread of these Mishnahis discussing about Ha'isha Shenafla, which is the theme of this parak, regarding a woman that is married and inherits Nechsim Elog, what do we do with them? So the Mishnah says, Nafla lo kesafim, if when she's married, she inherits monies, then Yilokach ben Karka, what you do is, and that we take those monies, we purchase land with it, V'hu'oichel peres, and he eats the produce of that field. Now, however, the Karen, the principle, which is what Nechsi Malug are, that she holds on to. Nechsi Tzern Basel, that goes to the husband. But Nechsi Milug, she holds on to the Karen, the principle. And the reason being is because the sages only instituted the pay raise. The produce of the Nechsi Milug goes to the husband, which is in place of because of Pirkoina that he has to redeem her. But the Karen remains hers. Now, however, since when she gets money, what happens is that since that's nichsi milog, which is that whatever she inherits then, the principal is hers and the produce goes to him, so what we have to do is we have to purchase something, which is what land is, that there is principal that could remain hers, but that the peiris, there could be something of utility that goes to the husband. Now, let's say peiris hatzlusha min hakarka. Let's say she inherits produce, which is detached from the ground. Nothing to do with ground. She inherits a whole truckload of fruit. So again, yilokach ben karka, since this is Nechse Melog, we have to find a way of her getting Karen and him getting Paris. So we purchase land with it, V'oichel Paris, and then he eats the Paris of that land. Let's say Paris HaMuchabarim Bekarka. Let's say she inherits produce that's attached to land. She gets a tract of land that has produce on it. So Amir Meir says, Shaman Isa Kamahi Yafa Bepair. So what we do is we evaluate this land. How much is it worth besides the land? How much more, let's say, would it be sold in value when it's full with produce? For Kama Yafa Balei Peres, and how much is it worth less if it's just a piece of land without produce? Now, the reason for this evaluation is because Remeya holds what grows when she's married to the husband, meaning in the husband's domain, that's considered Peres. Now, however, what grew not in his domain, that's considered the principal. Now, therefore, Umayser, the excess, more of the land for the produce, in other words, what the land is more worth higher in value because of the produce on it, for that we have to give that money, and Yilokach ben Karka, we take that extra money and we purchase land with it. And he eats the produce of that. In other words, since the land came with the produce already, that produce, according to Remeir, since it didn't grow in his domain, it grew before it came to him, that's considered, although it's Peris, but that is just like we said by Peris Atlushim, when it's detached, that is the Karen, that's the principle. Remeir holds that's the principle here also. So now, since it's produce, what you have to do is, you have to evaluate how much more is that value, because that value, although he's going to eat those pears possibly, but it's really her principal, so that he has to give her money for that, purchase land with it, and then that principal will remain hers, and then he'll eat the pears of that land. Now, the Chamayim, however, they argue. They say, Hamchubarim Lekarka, they say even these produce, which did not grow in his domain, still they have halachic status of pears, of produce, and the reason being is because since there's still land here, which that's the principal, so although it came with fruit on it, that's still the peris, and therefore shaloi, that goes to him. And v'hatlushim in our karka shaloi. However, if it came in to the marriage when she inherited, it was already detached, that's, as we mentioned before, that's hers. And v'ilokha ben karka, and therefore you go ahead and you purchase land with that v'oichel peris, and he eats the produce of that. Now, Reb Shimon concludes this discussion by making the following dictum. He says, Makim Shayafa Kaichai Bichnisasa. He says that where the husband has the upper hand when she inherits, when it's coming into his domain, then Hayra Kaichai Biyitsiasa. Then he has the lower hand when she leaves. In other words, if he's coming to divorce her. Makim Shahira Kaichai Bichnisasa, where he has the lower hand when she inherits it, when she's coming into the marriage, then Yafa Kaichai Biyitsiasa. Then he has the upper hand when she's leaving. What does that mean? Keitzad. So the Mishnah explains, Peiris ha-mechubarim le-karka bechnisasa, if at the time when she inherits it, the produce is attached to the land, then shaloi, then that's his, because it's produce, which is essentially like the Rabbanan said, and the Gemara is going to ask, it seems like Reb Shimon is saying the same thing as the Rabbanan, that's what Rabbanan said, because although Reb Meir said that that's hers, because that's considered part of the principle, but the Chacham and Reb Shimon hold, then no, it's ultimately it's produce, and the land is the principal, and therefore he gets that produce. Now, however, as he said in his maxim, he says, Ubitziyasa, however, that when she leaves, when he's divorcing his wife, and if it's the same type of a category, it's a property, it's land that has the produce attached to it, then shalah, then it's going to be hers. That means when she leaves and if she takes her land with her, which is the principal, she's going to take the produce with her. So although when she came in, he had the upper hand, when she leaves, he has the lower hand. And the same thing the other way, vatlushim in arkarka, those when she inherits it, if it's detached from the land, then mechnisasa shalah, then when she comes into the marriage, meaning when she inherits it, then that goes to her, that's the principle. Uvitsiyasa shaloi. However, when he divorces her, if he had already detached the produce before he divorced her, so then that's going to be the upper hand for him. That is, he has already inherited that from the Paris of Nechsi Milog, and therefore he gets to hold on to it. Now, relating to the halacha of the Mishnah, that we said that if she inherits monies, the first halacha of the Mishnah was, so what we do is, we purchase land with that, because this is what's called Nechsi Milog, and she maintains the land, which is the principal, and he eats the pears. So on that, the Gemara says, Pshita, it's obvious. If Aru Ubati, if there's two options that they're discussing about, okay, what should we do with this money, that one of them says, okay, let's buy land with it, which could be planted, and I want something that could be planted, and that it could be produce. And the other one says, and she says, that no, I want to go ahead and buy houses with this. Or let's say the other way around. So now the Gemara says that obviously the choice is going to be, no matter who's saying what, is Ara. That we're going to purchase with these monies, we're going to purchase land. The reason being is because, first of all, the income is greater with land. Moreover, it doesn't deteriorate as a house does. So therefore, both of them could hold back from the other one's opinion. In other words, the husband could say that I would prefer something that has more produce, and that's what I want, that's why I want land. And so too, if let's say he wants to go ahead and purchase houses with it, she could say, no, I don't want something that deteriorates that long and that the principal even is going to be diminishing, which happens with a house. And if I want land, so no matter who's saying what, each one of them has a good reason why land is going to be better, and therefore the choice is going to be land. Let's say bati v'dikla. Let's say the choices that they're discussing are either to purchase a house with it or to purchase a tree with that. And again, the reason for this is that either one of these things are going to have Karen and Paris. So then the choice is bati. They purchase houses with it because the income is going of a house is greater than that of a tree. Moreover, is that trees end up drying out. Therefore, that the principal is going to be deteriorating faster than it is going to be by houses. Again, the same two reasons that we could say why the woman wants it, which she wants the principal to last as long as possible. And the husband wants it, which is because he wants to have as much income, as much Paris as possible. So therefore, land is better than houses, land is better than trees. Now, dikli, if there's a date palm tree or vilani or other trees, so then dikli. So again, we're going this hierarchy, then the date palm tree is better than that. Lower down, ilani v'gufni. Let's say that there's other trees and a grapevine, so then ilani. So then other trees are better than the grapevine. So therefore, that's the order that the Gemara said of the discussions that either one can choose. And that's going to be the better one of the two, and therefore either one has the woman for the principal or the husband for the income, is land, houses, palm trees, and regular trees, and then grapevines. Now, the Gemara continues and says that if, let's say, she inherits Iba, which is a forest which has trees that they used to chop down for firewood or for other purposes of wood, or Zeradso, or she inherits trees, sorb trees, where the fruits weren't so significant for them, and therefore they would chop down those trees for wood, or pira de chavri, or a pond of a fish. So Amri Lo, those who say that if she inherits this thing, the chopping down of the wood or the catching the fish in that pond, that is that's considered the produce. And the land, which is the land in the pond or of the forest, that's considered her principal. And therefore, the husband, they don't sell the whole fish pond. They don't sell the whole forest. No, the land is hers, and he gets to use all the firewood. He gets to use all the fish. V'amri lo, and now those that say, no, that the entire thing is karina. The whole thing is principal. Now, the reason being is because the wood and the fish are going to disappear after a while. He's going to use it all up. And therefore, that's going to be no more principal. So therefore, you sell everything right away. And then they, from the money that they made, selling the forest or selling the fish pond, they buy land, and then he eats the payers. Now, on that opinion, the Gemara says that klal de milsa, the general rule of thumb is that gizay machlef, if you have, let's say, trees that the trunk regenerates, then payers. Then, let's say, in that forest, so then the trees are going to be the produce, and you don't have to sell everything and then go ahead and buy land and then use the paris, because the principle will maintain itself. The trees will remain because they regenerate, and therefore he can take off the wood, chop down the trees, use it for firewood. Engizim achlev, however, if the trunk does not regenerate, for example, let's say the trees of the sorb trees, where the tree does not regenerate, then karna, then it's considered the principle, because once that's gone, then according to this opinion, there's not going to be anything left. The land is not significant enough. It's the trees which are the principal, and the fruits are the produce. And therefore, since it doesn't regenerate, you have to sell everything and then buy land, and then it eats the payas from that. Now, related discussion, the Gemara says, Amr Zeru, Amr Ba'isha, Amr Bi'anai, V'Amr Lan. Some say it was Amr Abba, Amr Ba'isha, Amr Bi'anai. That Hagoinev, that if someone steals, the Rikitya on Tamad Beis, Vlad Behemis Milug, someone, a thief, steals a child of a behemoth milug, which is, for example, let's say a woman inherited an animal, so that's considered nichsi milug, and then that animal gave birth to a baby animal. So someone steals that baby. So on that, the Gemara says, Misham tashlumi kefa leisha. So So the thief, which is one of the penalties of a thief, then not only does he have to pay back the principal, but he also has to pay back as a penalty double that. He has to pay another amount. So on that he says it goes to the woman and not to the husband. Now the assumption the Gemara is because that he holds that the Vlad is not considered the pre, rather it's considered the principal. Therefore, you would go ahead and purchase land with that child, and therefore, when that's stolen, it's really the woman's. And therefore, the reason being is because we're concerned that maybe the mother's going to die, and therefore, there's not going to be anything left. So even the child is considered the Karen itself. So that's why it goes to the woman. So now the Gemara asks, come on, who is this opinion going like? If you go back to the Tanoim, it's not going like either one of the opinions. It's not like Linda Brisa. Vlad behemis milug labal. So we have clearly the first opinion mentioned in the Brisa, that the child of a behemim milug goes to the husband. It's considered peiris. Vlad shifchas milug leisha. However, the Tanakhama holds that the child of a shifcha, a maidservant, who's also the properties of the woman, and that's nixim milug, that the husband gets to use her, but the child goes to the woman, which later on the Gemara is going to explain why should there be a discrepancy if we say the Vlad is considered a pri, as we find by the animal, why is it different by a shifra? But V'chananya ben Achi Yoishi Amar, he says, Asu Vlad shifchas milog kivlad behemis milog. He says, no, that there is no difference between a maidservant or an animal. The children, the Vladis, are considered a pri. They're the derivative of the principle itself, and therefore it goes to the husband. But either way, both opinions, the Rabbanan and Chananya, both hold that the Vlad of a behemim milug goes to the husband. So why did we say from the Amiram that it goes to the woman if it's stolen, the kefil, but that's not her item? It's not as we had assumed that that's considered Karen, and let's say it would be sold to buy land with that, and then the husband gets paid from that, but this is the principle. Seemingly it's not. Seemingly it's the peri. So I think my answer is that Philotema Divri HaKal. You could even say that this Amaruk statement was going according to everybody, both of those Tanoic opinions. And the reason being is because Peira, the actual child, the actual animal itself, you're right, Takinu Le Rabbana, that Rabbana instituted that goes to the husband. Peira, the Peira, but however, the derivative of the derivative, meaning the Kefil, which is a Peira of the theft of that Peira, of the child, that Loi Takinu Le Rabbana, that Rabbana did not institute that goes to the husband. So interestingly, although the Peira itself, the produce, which is the child, would go to the husband, it's his, he can go ahead and do whatever he wants with it, but the kefil that comes from it, when that is stolen, that actually doesn't go to him, and that actually goes to the woman, and that's why it goes to her. Now the Gemara goes back now to explain this brisa that we asked from. Bishlemi l'chananya, we understand Chananya that said that you always say that the vlad, the child, goes to the husband. Now the reason being is because hainu d'lechashin l'misa, we're not concerned for the death of the mother. In other words, we always, and this is the discussion that we continue from Ahmed Aleph, is that the principle of Nichsim Elug, we want to make sure the woman maintains that. The peri, the produce, that goes to the husband. He can use utility from that as long as she maintains her item itself. That's why we said, let's say when she inherits monies or detached produce, he can't go ahead and just eat that because then she's left with nothing. She, and that's what the discussion we had in certain cases, what would be considered the Karen, what's considered the Peri, but she has to hold on to the Karen. Now, when there's a mother and a child, so then if the mother's still around, we're not considered for the death of the mother, then there's no more principle to say that even the child should be considered part of the principle, that we're not. And therefore, the husband gets the child of the maidservant, he gets the child of the animal. Now, but El Rabbanon, but according to the Rabbanon, what's the understanding of their discrepancy? Ichai she lemisa, if they're concerned for the death of the mother, well, then afilo vlad behemis milug namiloi. Then even the child of an animal milug should not go to the husband because we're concerned the mother will die. No more principle for the woman, and therefore the child should be considered part of the principle and not the payers. Yet he says clearly that goes to the husband. And v'iloi chayish lemis. And therefore, if you're going to say that they're not concerned for the death of the mother, well, then afilo vlad shivchas milug nami. Then even the child of a maidservant should also go to the husband. Why over there did he say that it goes to the woman? So the Gemara says, "La'olam chayish lemisa." The truth is that he is concerned for the death of the mother, and that's why he said that the vlad of a shifcha goes to her. But v'shani behema de'ika oira. So then, why did we say by the child of the animal that it does go to the husband if we're concerned the mother animal is going to die and then the woman's not going to be left without any karen? is because an animal, even if the mother dies, it's not a total loss of principle. There's still some principle here because you have the hide. You have the hide of the animal. So therefore, there's still something extant. As long as there's still something there, everything else can be considered the peri, and that's where the husband gets it. Whereas when an old maidservant dies, there's nothing left from her. And that's why even the child is considered part of the Karen, and therefore to the woman, not to the husband. Now, Amar Rav Huna b'Achi, Amar Shmuel, he says, halacha kechananya, halacha zechananya, that the vlad, the derivative, the child, always goes to the husband. Now, Amar Rav Nachman, he says, avagav de Amar Shmuel halacha kechananya. So he qualifies, he says, although Shmuel said halacha zechananya, but Maida Chananya, even Chananya himself would agree, she'im nisgarshim, that if she gets divorced, and yes, the husband got the rights in the vladis, because they're considered like payrus that were detached. In other words, once a child is born, just like we said in the Mishnah, when the field goes back to the woman, if he already took off produce, it's not considered payrus mukhubaran, it's already payrus tlushin, he gets to keep it, and therefore a child that's born essentially should be maintained by the husband, even if she gets divorced and she takes her maidservant with her. Child does not go with her. But Chananya agrees that if she gets divorced, that noisenis, that the woman gives to her husband, her ex-husband, dam and money, v'netlasen, and she takes the children of a maidservant back with her, back to her father's household. Why? That's a klal in halacha, which is called, it's the family inheritance. This is the glory of her father's household. This is the maidservant and her children. This is all part of her father's household. So therefore, although that the husband married it because of the halacha of Paris, but still the halacha mandates that she's allowed to give him money to pay for their child to go ahead and take back with her. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman. Hechnisaloi eiz l'chalba. If let's say she inherited and she brought in, as Paris Nichsi Milog, goats for the milk, meaning that he could consume the milk, of a rochel legizasa, or a sheep for the shearings, which we're just talking about the primary utilities of certain animals. And that's why we picked that. But the truth is it would be even for the produce of the children. It doesn't make a difference. It's just that these are the main ideas, that a goat is for the milk and the sheep is for the wool. Or she brought in a hen for its eggs, or the dekel leperaisav, or the palm tree for its fruits. So Rav Nachman said that he can continue consuming the produce, shearing the wool, and drinking the milk, and eating the eggs, until the principle has been totally depleted. Now the reason for this is because every one of these items will always have some type of a karen left over. By the animal, you have the hides. By the hen, you have the feathers. By the tree, when it gets dried up, even though he consumed all the produce, he ate it bone dry, there's nothing left to it, there's still the wood. And therefore, since all these items that he's consuming are the produce of the utility, and because the reason is because they're constantly renewing itself. So since that's the way of deriving pleasure from an item of utility, so that's the husband's rights. So though it's going to be totally consumed, there's nothing going to be left of it, there's still something left of it. And therefore, that even though it's essentially tichla karen, there's no more principle, there's still some principle. So therefore, that fits into the halacha of nechsi miluk. Similarly, Amar Rav Nachman, he says, Aila le glima, if she brought in a garment from nechsi miluk into the marriage, so although it wasn't evaluated in the ksuba as a nichsi term barzel, so therefore, as we differentiated that before, there has to be some principle left over, because he doesn't get the principle. The principle is always hers. He just gets to use the utility. In spite of that, peirahava, the utility of the garment, of covering himself, let's say it's a coat or a sweater, that's the utility. So mechasi beva azel adekalia. He can go ahead and use it and cover himself and use it in the winters and whatever until it totally gets depleted, until it's just like a rag. But the rag is considered a karen. That's the principle that's left over. There's still going to be something there, so he can use it till it's totally used up. Now that the Gemara has come on. When Rav Nachman said this halacha, that no matter what little is remnants are left over, that's still considered principle, and therefore he could continue using it in utility, and that's not a problem of not maintaining her principle. It's kihai tana, it's like the following tana, which are the Rabbana who augur and remeir in the following brisa. It's not like learning a brisa. Hamelech, regarding salt, which is, let's say she inherits at the edge of the sea, which are these ditches that they make, which is that the seawater gathers in there and the sun dries it out, and that makes the salt. Or v'achoyl, let's say she inherits a piece of a place where they use the sand, that they use it for building. So harizik kaperis, so the salt, the earth, that's that sand, that's considered like the produce. In other words, we don't say that, okay, we have to sell that whole area, what she inherited, and then purchase land with it, which could be planted, and then he eats the peiris of that land. The reason being is because these produces never get consumed, and that is, even Remei would agree to this halacha, because as long as it's by the sea, so seawater continuously comes in, so that salt is not considered Karen, that's considered peiris, even though it's totally used up, so too for the chayil, there's always going to be some earth over there, so that's considered peiris. Now, however, Pirshal Gafris, let's say she inherited a pit where they dig and they get sulfur from, or Machperishal Tzrif, which is where they dig and they get alum from, which is they use it to dye garments and silk, and they dig there in the ground. Now, regarding this halacha, here, ultimately, it will be depleted, because when they get to the virgin, when they hit rock bottom, then there's no more of these minerals left. So Remeir says that, therefore, the yalum, the sulfur is considered the principal. So therefore, you take that sulfur and you sell it, you purchase with that money land, and then he eats the peiris of that land. The reason being is because since the peiris will be depleted, so that's considered the karen. But the Chacham say, and this is who Reb Nachman was going like, they say, no, it's considered produce. And the reason being is because the area of the pit itself, that land, is considered the principal that's left over. And therefore the husband could continuously use up the sulfur until it's totally used up, because that produce, that's the way how people derive pleasure from something, that's considered utility, and therefore that's the same thing for Reb Nachman's halacha of the garment. And that's different than like the case of our Mishnah, when she inherited monies or detached produce, where if that would be eaten, nothing would be left of it. It's nothing here. And therefore, every single item, every single pruta of that monies, since it doesn't make peiri, is considered the principal. That's why it has to be sold and purchased land. But here, there's going to be something left over. It might be a rag. It might be just the land that had the sulfur inside of it. And therefore, Rav Nachman passed like the Chacham, that's considered peiris, and you don't have to purchase land to then use peiris of that. Now, the Mishnah concluded by saying, Reb Shimon Omer, he made the following statement that Mokum Shayofa Kaichai, where he has the upper hand when she inherits it, then he has the lower hand. When she inherited, he had the lower hand, then he has the upper hand when she leaves. Now, the Gemara asked, as we alluded to this when we quoted it, that Reb Shimon Hain Tanakam, Reb Shimon essentially is the same opinion as the Chachamim, who they say seemingly say the same halacha. So Amar Rav, Rav says, no, that there is one area which is not discussed by the Rabbanan, that they argue with Reb Shimon. Mechubarim b'shas yitzi'i ikabayna. The difference between them is if when she's leaving, when he divorces her, the produce is attached to the land, there they differ. And that is, the Rabbanan do not agree to Reb Shimon that said regarding this halacha that when she's leaving, because they hold what grew in his domain is his. And that is, Reb Shimon said that no. Reb Shimon says that only if it was detached, then it's already his. But if it's attached, that's considered part of her land. And therefore, that the Chacham say that when she's leaving and it's detached, they're going to hold that actually, no, he's going to get the peiris, it's considered peiris. And just like when it comes in, that they argue in Reb Meir and they say that it's considered peiris, so too, it's going to be considered peiris, and he gets to keep it, again, in contrast to Reb Shimon, who said that, no, if it's attached to the land, then when she leaves, then it's considered hers, and he doesn't get it. Now Rashi points out, there's another case not discussed by the Chachamim, which is if it was detached when she leaves. There Rashi says, we couldn't have said that that's where they argue and that they hold that it's going to be hers, and the reason is because once it's already detached, Evan agrees he already merited already, and therefore it's already his, and therefore obviously in that case, everyone would agree that it's going to be his. The machlekes between them was, if it's mechubar mishas yitzia, there Reb Shimon said that that's something that it's yafa kaychai. He had the upper end when she came in, that's considered peiris, but that's hayra kaychai when she leaves, and that the Chama argue and say that no, it doesn't make a difference, even if it's attached, since it grew in his domain, that he's going to be able to hold take it, and even though it wasn't reaped, but he's going to be able to take it, not like Reb Shimon. Now the Gemara continues. The next Mishnah, again, continuing on this theme of Ha'isha Shanaflu, Naflu La'avadim Ushvachai Zikenim. Let's say she inherited elderly male and female servants. So yimachu b'lokach min karka. So since there's not really much utility with them, so we need to make that the nixim luk shav keren and peres. So they're sold, and their value, that the money they got from it, they purchased land with it, v'uechel peres, and he eats the peres. Shimon Gamliel, he says loy temker. He says that she could hold back and not have them sold. Because again, they're the glory of the father's household. These are the, you know what, this maidservant was to our family, and therefore that she doesn't have to sell it. Similarly, let's say she inherited these old vineyards that they had in the family for so many years and the olive groves. So So since they have no utility anymore, so they, according to Tanakama, they are sold in the purchased land, but the person eats the produce. And on Veshavi Hudaim is similarly like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. In the previous case, he says, Loitim Grubnation Shvach Besavia. This, you know, with these lands were for our family and the glory of the father's house, so she doesn't have to sell them. So Amrav Kahanam Rav, he qualifies and he says that Machlaikis, this Machlaikis that we mentioned in Mishnah regarding the vineyards and the olive groves, that's only Shanaflu Besadishallah. That's only if she inherited these the olives and the vineyards and the grapevines, that if it's in her own fields. In other words, she got the vineyards themselves, the lands with the trees, so that when the olive trees dry up, so she has the land itself for principal. So that's where we had a machlaikis. What do we do over here? Do we sell it or could she hold on to it? But if what happened is that her father had olive trees that he purchased without land. And that is, he told the seller that, I just want to purchase the trees and you can hold on to the land. Now, so what is it, what he does is, the one who purchased it, he consumes it, he uses it up until it dries out. Now, on that route, Rav says, Divri HaKol Timker. Everyone would agree that she cannot withhold and that we sell it and we purchase land with it. And no one could hold back from selling, and the reason is because there's no shvach besavi over here, mishum dekal yekarna. Because over here, once the tree gets used up, there's nothing left over here. There's nothing for her to say, oh, what's going to be with the family heirloom? What family heirloom? It's just a tree. Once the tree gets used up, there's nothing here. So therefore, everyone would agree over there, even according to Rabbi Huda, that she can't hold back. Now, that mask of Rabbi Yisrael asked, what do you mean? Look at the resha of the Mishnah. Hari avad mishvachis, we had the case of the servants, the chisad she'ena shalah dami, where that's essentially like having trees in a field that's not yours. And the reason being is because it's the same qualification of that when the servant dies, there's nothing left over here. The whole principle is gone. There's nothing to hold on to as a family heirloom. Upligin, still there's a machlekes in the Mishnah, and there's still we said, which is the opinion of Shimon Gamliel, that as long as they're around, so then it is for her and for her father a beautiful thing. It's a family heirloom. It's something to hold on to. You're right. Once they're going to die, there's nothing going to be left. But you see, it has nothing to do with having something that can stay forever. So Eliyad Mahochid Masa, you're right. The Gemara says, actually, it's the other way around. That if you want to say the statement, it was Amrav Kahanam Rav, Machlikis Besada She'ena Shalah. The whole Machlikis was the other way around. That it was only if it was the tree that was inherited, not in her own field. Then we had a machlekes, is it sold and then bought with land, or could she hold back? Besad shalah, but if it was in her own field, then divrei hakoloi timka. Then actually, everyone would agree, even Tanakama, that it's not sold. Nishvach, basically, because even Tanakama would agree over there, that's definitely a family heirloom. And that is to the contrary. When it's not her own field, when it's like avad mishvachis, then he holds it and there's no shvach besavia. But if it's something that is her own field, oh, then, of course, even Tanakam would agree that she doesn't have to sell it because of Shvach Besavia. Nothing more continues. The next mission, again, continuing on this theme of Isha Shanaflu, Hamoitzi Haitzois al Nichse Ishtai. If the husband went and had expenses for his wife's property, and that is, she brings this all into the marriage, and he's taking care of the money, so he went and he had to spend so much money on her properties. So the Mishnah says, doesn't make a difference if Haitzi Harba V'Achal Kimo, whether he spent so much money to maintain her lands, and he only got so little produce out of it, or Kimo V'Achal Harba, or he only spent very little on it, and he consumed, this was a real potluck, a real great find he got with his wife's estate, doesn't make a difference. Masha Haitzi Haitzi, what he expended, in other words, if he divorced her, there's nothing that he can get back for it. U'mash achal achal, amari 88, it doesn't make a difference which one was more, which one was less. They cancel each other out, and it is what it is. But, ha'itzi v'lo achal, if he spent money on her properties, and he didn't eat from it, he didn't even take any pace from it, so then the Mishnah concludes that yishava kama ha'itzi v'yito. Then, when he divorces her, then he swears how much, he takes an oath how much he spent on it, and then he gets reimbursed for what he spent, because since the whole idea of it is that the payris that he gets, that then it qualifies for what he spent on it, but if he didn't even take that, and he's just spending money on her things, he's making her property better, then he swears how much he spent for her, and then he gets to take that back.